All right, good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our meeting. Meeting is called to order. Will you all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? We do have a quorum. I was informed earlier today that Director Rice will not be with us today. Do we have a report from closed session, Mr. Carmel?
We do, President Pearson. We had a very brief closed session where we touched base on the interim general manager's performance, as we have for quite a few weeks.
Okay. Thank you. All right. Everybody looked at the agenda. Anybody have any additions, deletions, or does anybody want to change anything, switch anything around or anything? No? We're good? Okay. All right. We'll move along to public safety. We have a new representative from the Sheriff's Department. Come on up.
Good afternoon. Justin Nelson, commander at the Sheriff's Coast Station. Recently took over for Commander Manueli, so I'll be coming to the meetings. Got this month's stats for June. So in Cambria, for the month of June, we had a total of 348 calls for service, and we took a total of 30 reports. Last year, same time, 233 calls for service and 19 reports. So we're up a little bit. Some of the notable calls, starting with assault and battery, we got a report of domestic violence for the month of June. However, it was unfounded. It was a verbal argument only. We also responded to a battery between a adult daughter and mother. Ended up charges being filed against the daughter for battery, and the daughter was also found in possession of suspected heroin. Had a total of 14 disturbance calls with 4 reports, nothing notable. 2 burglary reports, no property loss in both cases. We had a total of 2 thefts for the month of June. One was a plant stolen from the front of a residence. And then also camera equipment and an iPad taken from an unlocked vehicle. That was total $4,000 loss. So just a reminder, keep all valuables. Try and keep them out of your vehicle, or at least like put them in the trunk. Keep them out of sight. Keep your vehicle locked. No suspects in that case. We had a notable vandalism in June. It was an incident that happened at Highway 1 in Windsor. A couple was stopped at the traffic light there. A male subject got out of the vehicle and stabbed their right rear tire with a knife, puncturing it. The subject then fled the area, and the suspect has not been located. The suspect vehicle was a burgundy Dodge flatbed truck, and the suspect was a white male adult with a long beard and was described as having messy hair. And like I said, at this time, he has not been located. No reported mail thefts this for June. We had 3 phone scams. The notable one was A victim contacted PayPal. She actually got the number off the internet. You can get bad numbers off the internet, even when you search. Contacted what she thought was PayPal. They wanted to verify her location, and they requested that she get a Google Play card for $100 and give them the number, and then they would verify the location and refund the money. Obviously, that didn't happen. So just be aware, we're getting lots and lots of phone scams. They always change. And then I spoke with Deputy Mora today. He checked the homeless camp that is on the hill, I guess, over here off Santa Rosa Creek Trail. He said it was the biggest fire risk, so he checked that today, and it is abandoned, so it is all ready for cleanup, and he emailed Carlos. And that is all I have.
Okay, very good. Any questions for Commander?
Not so much questions as comments. In a very loose description, the white male with messy long hair and a long beard, I did happen to see someone like that up in San Simeon yesterday morning. I don't know whether that's of any value or point of reference at all.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe we can talk afterwards and I can get that information from you. That'd be great.
Thank you. Anything else? Yes.
Yeah, Officer Nelson, welcome aboard.
Thank you.
And I just wanted to comment because you remarked there were two thefts, one of them being a plant. I don't know if I brought this up before, but I think many people know in the community that I take care of the planter, the majority of the planter boxes here in town that have the trash and recycling cans underneath them. And I've done that for a little over 3 years, and probably about 36 plants have been stolen out of those. You know, the small plants, but it happens. Recently, I'm going to say it's about 2 months ago, I had noticed from a Sunday to a Wednesday that three plants had been taken from the one in front of Lombardi's. Thursday, I had stopped to get the Cambrian at the liquor store, came over to get the New Times, and while I'm opening the machine there to get the New Times out, I hear somebody ripping a plant out. This woman was as close to me as David, President Pearson, and she was ripping the nicest plant in that one right out, and I was like, and I confronted her, and she said, well, I thought these were just for taking, you know, and she lives in Cambria. I just thought I'd bring that up, man, because it was really a trip. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else have anything for the sheriff? All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
All right, next up is the fire chief, Chief Hollingsworth.
Good afternoon. Thank you for letting us be here today. Report is for the month of June. For fire responses within the community, there was 81 emergency responses inside Cambria. That's putting us on a pace of about 12% increase from last year. One of the things you're going to start noticing more and more is if you see our big red water tender out on the road more, as we're getting out into the summer months, as we are an aggressive participant with the auto aid for the community, it goes out on fires anywhere in the county as necessary. So, for instance, there was a fire in the rural areas of Paso Robles last night, and it had ended up going over there. It's the only municipal-staffed fire engine in the county. Cal Fire does have some that are available by contract. They also have some others that are available to cross-staff as necessary, but it's a lot faster to get ours on the road, which is why they like using it as much as possible. So you'll see it out there quite a bit. I want to tell you that we had a very successful 4th of July. If anybody made it down to the park area, there was quite a few people down there. A successful fireworks shoot. There were no incidents secondary to that, which I'm always very happy to report. We didn't even have any negative contacts with the community. As you know, this is a zero tolerance for the community in regards to fireworks. They're all fireworks here, including safe and sane, are not allowed in Cambria. And sometimes we have some issues with people coming from other locales, bringing ordnance with them, and then having to confiscate it. And luckily, we didn't have any issues with that. They must be getting the word out a little bit more aggressively, so I'm happy to report that. We still have a number of active grants in process right now. We have a radio grant through FEMA that we're still pending on. We're making it through a number of the different check processes in that, so we have not gotten the Dear John letter saying you're out of contention, which is a really good process. So we're still keeping our fingers crossed. We have two defensible space grants out there through the Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, and these are secondary to the floods and the fires that occurred down in Santa Barbara this last year. And a couple of weeks ago, we were able to file a third grant with that Hazard Mitigation Grant Program, and this is in coordination with Ken Topping, and we're working on putting together a how to apply for grants handbook that would be utilized throughout the entire state of California. So all of those are pending right now. We're looking forward to being able to report on those, hopefully successfully, as time allows. On June 29th, we were able to host a very positive event here in this building. It was a wildfire preparedness fair. There was approximately 250 people here. Depending on who you asked, there might be as many as 300, but there was a lot of people coming in and just visiting and seeing what was going on and then leaving because there was very limited seats, people packed in on the walls, against the walls. Excellent presentations, not only from PG&E, as you know that there's an aggressive power shutoff program that everybody should be notified on. We put information on the CCSD website about this, and there was an excellent presentation on what to expect and how to harden your home in regards to being prepared for that eventuality. So we're thankful that they spent some time there. We're also working aggressively with developing an updated evacuation plan for the community, and Dan Turner with the Fire Safe Council made an excellent presentation, and we've had some proof of concept studies done in specific areas for the community, and we're looking for additional funding to finalize that and update basically an entire evacuation map and plan for everybody that would be mailed out so they would have that information, and we would absolutely put that on our website and publicize it and market it as much as we can. And other than that, I think I'm going to be over to you for any specific questions or clarification on what happened over the last month.
All right. Anyone? Vice President Farmer.
Yeah, thank you. And all the best in getting that grant for the radios.
Yes, sir.
A couple of people have brought this up. Normally, I wouldn't mention it, but since people have inquired to me, I guess to ask you perhaps, with regard to hydrant maintenance and testing, and why it has declined this year. I know there must be a really good reason, but since folks have asked, I thought you could answer it right now, and we'll go from there.
Absolutely. I'd be happy to. I think I have brought this up in the past, but as you remember, over the last couple of years, so 18 and 17, when we had the additional firefighter personnel through the SAFER program, we were able to take them and line them out with those projects, a lot of different kinds of projects in the community. And hydrant maintenance was one of the things that we had talked with the water department about, being able to, everybody being limited on personnel and availability, and if we have some extra people on staff and assign them those tasks, it is something that's incredibly important to us. We utilize them frequently for training, and we exercise them in that capacity, but we don't have the time and personnel to go out and commit to this on a regular basis like we did when we had the appropriate staffing to do so. So even though I'm not being able to report right now that we're having success in getting X number of hydrants fully serviced, they are out in the field training and using them, and any problems we come across, we fix on site or immediately are turned over to the water department. Ideally, if we have some more people on staff or have the ability to bring in more people above our minimum staffing levels to be able to augment that, that absolutely would be a priority to finish that and coordinate that with the water department.
Okay, thanks very much. Mm-hmm. Good luck.
Anyone else? Questions for the chief? All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. All right. We now move to the PROS Commission report, and we have Mr. Niffen here, who's chairman of that commission.
Good afternoon. Don't have much to report. Mr. John, I wanted to say welcome to you. I saw you at the 4th of July or the 5th of July, and that was awesome to see you there. So that's good that you're in it. And I thought that that was a good litmus test to how you're doing in your job, because we've discussed that. And as long as you can go to the 4th of July, you know you're being accepted in the community. So as soon as you're afraid to go to the 4th of July, that's when you know things are going bad. I don't know. I saw here. All right. So that was one thing. It gets us to another thing. Joyce Renshaw, our commissioner, has resigned due to, family stuff that goes on. And I just wanted to say thank you to her. She was an awesome commissioner. She was my kind of, stalwart that I would go to when I would get off. She would always bring me back when at a meeting she would look at me and say, "Well, Steve," and then I knew that I was floating off somewhere. So the commission is going to miss her, and we want to thank her for her service. We have two positions coming up in December. We have alternates on the board. We don't really need to fill that spot here in the next 6 months, we don't think, because we have alternates and a process to fill voting members at meetings. So we thought we would just fill that spot in December when we have to fill the two other regular spots, which brings us to the point we've got spots coming up in December, and really we want to circulate in new blood. Nobody is on the commission is trying to hold on to those spots for any reason. So if you're interested, let us know. It'll get officially started probably in October sometime, how many ever days out. So that's one of the things. And then the stuff we're working on, the East Ranch, working on the bathrooms over there, trying to figure out what we're going to do with the bathrooms and getting together a little contract with, I can never remember, Monty's group, to run the thing through the park so we can get the right permits and figure out how we're going to do the water and all the ins and outs. So if you're interested in that, come to the meetings, because that's on the horizon and stuff we're working on. Then the other thing that we've been talking about is the skate park, and we've received some information and letters about that, and we went over there, we looked at it, and we've got a couple of commissioners that are going to create a little mini group and go look and try to figure out what to do. But we're at a spot now, we're trying to figure out what the kids really want to do. And so if you're out there and you're skaters, or your parents of skaters, and you want to grab this bull by the horn, it's there, but we need to know what it is that the kids in that group of constituents want. So we're kind of at that.
I'm a little concerned about the skate park because of the dangers. Should we be closing it until we can figure out what exactly to do with it and make it safer?
That would be beyond my personal capacity. If you were in Europe, it would be fine because you're responsible for your own liability over there. Here in America, things are different. So that would be something for the lawyers and everybody else to look at. There are components to it. The cement isn't broken. So there is stuff that's usable, in that capacity. But there is some stuff going on with the wood components that, probably should be shut down at some level. Harry was there with us. Harry, do you got a comment on that?
Yeah, I think maybe that's a future agenda item that we should investigate, whether we should close down the park. You were talking about an ad hoc committee being created. It's our former board director, Jim Barringer, and Terry Lord. And so they're going to follow up on this, but basically they wanted to wait until the schools opened again and they could have more interaction with the kids and the parents to find out. But I think one of the things we were concerned about, well, the local kids, they kind of know where the problems are. They avoid them. But let's say you have some folks visiting from out of town, and they've got kids, and they get out there, and they start using it, and they're unaware of some of these issues, and so something could happen there. So I think that was, I recall that being a concern.
Yeah. It's an inherently dangerous sport anyway, so most of the kids that participate are pretty aware of their surroundings before they get going. But nonetheless, it is at a point, at least the one ramp probably should not be being used anymore.
So when you went over and looked at that, is that one ramp, could we just take that one out?
Yeah, Carlos has put chains on him at different times. I would refer to Carlos, and he can incapacitate them at one form or another, I would think.
Okay. Yeah, my concern is the same as the vice president's, that somebody from out of town comes in and is not aware of it, and the poor kid gets hurt, okay? And then, Mr. Carmel, no matter how many signs are up there that say you're doing this at your own risk, it's still a legal issue, correct? It's a litigable, or whatever that is.
I just wanted to say this in a positive note. The skate park in Los Osos, which is a well-functioning, good park, gets lots of use. So at some point where there is a product that is usable, the kids will use it.
Yeah, I agree. I think we should have.
And the more stuff we have for them to do, hopefully the more stuff they'll do.
Right. And so is your ad hoc committee also considering whether it should be where it is now or move to the East Park?
We have talked about a lot of that, and that's a great conversation, too. You know, do you move it over there where no one can see it, or is it better on Main Street where you can see it? And that's a lot of personal opinions, you know. I personally don't mind it on Main Street, seeing the kids playing around there, and then that doesn't bother me, but that's a pretty nice piece of property for maybe something else, and we do have the, you know, all that property over there, so.
Okay.
Yeah, lots of fun. Nothing negative. It's just, you know, moving and shaking, new stuff coming in, you know, stuff getting old, like the rest of us. Awesome. Great.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it. I would like... at the next meeting, if Carlos could give us an update on it and see whether we can at least get rid of some of the hazardous portions of the skate park in lieu of shutting it down entirely until we get a decision from the PROS Commission. Okay. Thank you. All right, next up is the utilities report. We have Mr. Green here. Welcome.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'll start off with John Alchin's wastewater report. For the month of June, he had another meeting with Brett Patera from PG&E, who will make himself available should there be any meetings coming up forward, maybe public meetings if somebody has some direct comments or questions for him. Also, finally, some of our older equipment that we put on public surplus, we finally moved one of our older units, kind of defunct 2005 diesel. So we finally moved that. It had originally sold and then fell out, and we finally moved that for a second time. We had a fallen tree behind the wastewater plant. It was coming precariously close to our ponds, and that was removed. Ortec came in to give a short class on how to operate the newly installed rag removal screen, which is... a key member of that new installation. Unfortunately, we lost a Cambria local here who had been an operator in training for us, James Swollenwager. He went back to the Valley to Yosemite to do some GIS work, which is kind of his main forte. So we wish him well. In replacement of Jim Swollenwager, we took Timothy Omar back from facilities to fill that vacancy there. So that was excellent. Good to have him back.
You took him back? Did you kidnap him, or how was that done?
Yeah. Well, Carlos graciously returned him. We'll leave it at that, so yeah. And then the 3,200-pound crane truck, which had been much desired, we finally took receipt of in the last week of June. So we've got that stickered and decaled up and in service, ready for action. And the handrails that have been installed earlier in the year, is finally painting has begun. However, I stole the painter to help pressure spray the finalizing of the... cleaning of the pond, so that's been derailed and probably be finished probably by August or early August. Finally, John had sought many proposals for manhole lid replacements. I think we all have seen the manhole lid that's at Windsor and the one right there, and so looks like he's got a contractor who's got a bid who we've accepted, and that work will begin here in the next week or so. There's 23 total lids that need to be replaced out in our collection system, and we'll probably take those in groups of three or four and have those done, and hopefully we'll have those done by the end of summer also. There's a level transmitter at our state lift station number 9, which is our last one on the way out to on Moonstone Drive. It had trouble with a faulty sensor, and it was calling out people in the middle of the night, and so that was replaced by Tough Automation. And finally, staff use a new push camera to identify an existing service on Brighton, and looking forward to use a new camera, and it's so far working up to its potential that was indicated.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Hang on for a minute. We've got two people who would like to comment on this particular area, so I'd like to hear from Mr. Gray first, and he will be followed by Ms. Dickinson.
Hello, thank you for letting me talk, and thank you to, I want to thank Jim, especially and the staff of the CCSD for, I guess, almost completing the pond cleanup. I guess the pressure washing is the last step, I understand, right? I wanted to talk a little bit about that and so have a comment both about the past and the future. The pond, as a lot of you, as you know, the method of cleaning out the pond was worked out in partnership with the Central Coast Regional Water Quality Control Board following a hearing 2 years ago, almost exactly, in Watsonville. And it's an interesting story about collaboration and about the board itself, which I think of the water board itself, which I think deserves a lot of credit. At that time, as you know, the water board staff had basically left it open as to how the pond was going to be cleaned up. They just said basically do it as soon as possible. And a handful of us, I think about five of us, went down there. And there's other people from Cambry there too, but there are distinctly five of us with this message, went down there to say, wait, this is, you know, potentially this could cost more than $1 million to the ratepayers just to have the water. And, of course, it was full of water at the time, diluted brine, trucked off to South County. So we said, give us a break on this. Give the ratepayers a break. Give us some forbearance. Work out a plan where we can empty the pond in due course in a safe way, but not so expensively. And the board, after some consideration, listened. They came up with this blending plan, which has worked. And I'm glad it's completed now. The lesson of this, is that it's always better to be a partner with state agencies than an adversary. And I think the Water Board has continued to be very supportive. Of course, their action in May, giving a green light to the brine disposal method through hauling and everything is very, very positive. And I'm glad to see that relationship continuing as along those lines. And I just hope the Coastal Commission has the same idea of how they should be working with us in the long term. So that's my comment on the past. My comment on the future is, where do you go from here? Now that you've just about emptied the pond, two things I think are paramount. One, of course, is to do the least expensive, most effective thing to follow up. In other words, either if the pond is to be restored to a natural state, the liners rolled up, taken away, if that's the cheapest way to do it, if that's the best solution, do it, and drop the idea, any ideas of reuse, repurposing, and so forth. I think there's a fallacy there of sunk costs. If you must spend money on something, you have the temptation to spend more to make it work. But if it's cheaper just to walk away from it and not make it an issue in the coastal development permit, for instance, I think that's the wiser course. The other point, which I think we have to bear in mind going forward, is that the solution you have now, I think I consider trucking the brine a temporary, very expensive stopgap. It accounts for more than at least 3/4 of the operating costs of the plant when it's being operated, when it's being run. And the more the plant is run, the more it costs, because the big cost, of course, is the fees that are charged by the South County Sanitation District and the truck. I think you have to continue looking for less expensive, more effective, and more environmentally sound ways of disposing of the brine. There are a couple of ideas floating around. I know that I'm not going to get into the details of it, though the idea of having a deep injection waste well is probably the most viable one long term, but will take, you know, a number of years to permit it and so forth. But I think you have to keep the ratepayers in mind going through the whole process. And of course, you know, anything you do has to be environmentally, you know, an improvement over what you have now, I think, especially a cost improvement. But I think we're in a good things are going the right way, and I hope they continue. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Dickinson? Welcome.
Good afternoon, President and Board and staff. On this item, I do have a couple of questions that have not been brought up by Mr. Green. I understood from a director yesterday that the blowers have been removed from the evaporation pond. I would like to know who, at whose request, where are the blowers? They were, I think, believed an asset, as many of our assets were included in the lease sales agreement. So I would like to know how that was addressed with Western Alliance Bank, as they are the owners of our assets, including the blowers. I would like to know who made the request. Where are the blowers? I'd like an answer. And I'd also like to know why Mr. Ogren is not here. Because the questions that I have raised, both with Mr. Ogren, when he was interim manager and I had a private meeting with him, have still not been answered. They go to what this board is expecting of this, of the public in addressing the regular CDP. This board is asking the Resource and Infrastructure Committee to hold meetings, a meeting or meetings, where the public is invited to discuss the project description. I'm not an engineer. I've paid close attention to this whole process since it first played out, the previous process, when the desal plant was recommended by a previous board at Shamel Park. And I was one of five people who went to the Coastal Commission, and we received a unanimous vote against that project. I'm frustrated because answers are not coming from the board. Answers are not coming from staff that are, we're on the precipice of trying to get a regular CDP for a project that we have been dealing with for 5.5 years. I want to know when those answers are coming, and I would have expected Mr. Ogren to be at this meeting to address the issues if he is the one who is dealing with the regular CDP as we are attempting to go forward. And we'll have more to say in the general manager's report. I put a public comment slip in. But for Mr., I would like to know what's happened to samples that are taken from the liquids. Where are the results from the liquids coming from the evaporation basin that are supposed to be sent off to the lab to be tested and to determine whether they go to Kettleman or to South Sand District, based on the content and the data received from the analyses of those tests. I do get regular reports when I request from the regional board, but I have no, I do not have an answer yet as from the district, and neither does Mr. Rocky, I don't believe, on lab results to determine where those contaminants and or the liquids that contain contaminants are to be disposed of. So those are my thoughts and those are my questions, and I think they're important ones. And the public needs to know what is happening. The blowers, the testing, the samples that have to be tested, and before, and also I understand that regional has been delayed now 2 weeks on inspection of the basin for them to approve the decommissioning and then to revoke the permit. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Green, would you like to answer a couple of those questions?
Sure, I was going to continue on with the rest of my staff report, but I'll divert to questions. First of all, the blowers were removed at the request of Regional Water Board. All appurtenances, all tubing, anything that had to do with any movement, air movement, water flow, liquid flow, brine, had to be removed prior to our final inspection walk. The blowers have not been sold or anything. They're sitting in our wastewater yard. Still in house.
Good. Thank you.
Samples. We've taken liquid samples and we've done solid samples. We've done liquid samples weekly and solid samples twice annually. All those results go EDI, electronic distribution of information, directly to our Regional Water Quality Board and State Court. So John Rocky has all those. As soon as our analysis we receive, they receive them directly also. and that's solids and liquids. And as far as decommissioning of the pond, we put a very aggressive goal as far as staff for a June 30th deadline, which staff met. Unfortunately, our pressure washer, I mean, that's 9 million gallons. It's 27 acre foot. And it was one guy and his son out there who gave us a very reasonable price, and it was our lowest bidder. And so he's still out there right now. Unfortunately, until September 27th, I believe, in Watsonville, that will be the final date that we can close the Title 27. So,
okay. So Mr. Rocky's coming out when?
We have a tentative schedule for next week.
Okay, good.
So, yeah.
All right.
But it wouldn't matter if it was next week or next month. I mean, we can't close until September. There's no title permit fees that we're having to pay into this or bond required at this time. So as far as him coming out and give us a final walk, that just concludes all of our monitoring process, which is weekly now.
Good. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Green? I have. Sure. Emergency power, can you
I'll give you some
update
updates.
Us yeah,
I'll give
you some both updates. Water and wastewater?
So I've been seeking bids on permanent, so skid-mounted installations of a permanent 100-kilowatt generator for our San Simeon well fields and some portable generators. Obviously, with this rolling blackout that PG&E's rolled out to everyone, generators are in high demand. The quickest we could get purchase one would be 10 weeks, and most vendors are looking 3 to 4 months out. So I've sought some vendors. I've experienced some generator purchasing before at my prior chief plant operator position, and I've sought some people out in Ohio who would be willing to rent. So I'm seeking bids on rentals, and the quickest we could get a rental in here would be 2 weeks. So that's all in the process. As far as installation and purchase, I'm still about 2 out of 3 bids that I've received, and I'm sending those all directly to our new GM.
Okay. How about on the wastewater side? Are we prepared on the wastewater side?
I don't have any answers for John as far as his generators. Although okay. We just had Tim Haveman from Utility Rentals out today, and he was talking with Tony. He's kind of filling in John's off today. So they're kind of, you know, they're sizing up. You need kilowatts, how many amps you pull when you start up. So they're getting some final specs on that so that we can give an accurate bid.
Okay. Very good. Any other questions? Yes, Dr. Howell.
Yeah, to kind of follow up a little bit on that. So assuming we were to have a rolling outage starting next week, how would we be able to, what state would we be in at this point?
Right, so we have a San Simeon well field, which we'd have a portable generator right now at the wastewater plant, which is the wastewaters, which we could utilize. It's kind of it's a cam lock fitting, so it's a quick connect or a plug and play, whatever kind of terms you want to use to describe it, and that's what we'd have to count on.
So that would take care of the
That would get us through the water. Interim until we get something more adequately sized. That would only be able to run one well at a time. That's we want something that we could run two wells at a time. Unfortunately, our San Simeon well 2 processes at 370 gallons per minute. I need something that I can run 2 so that way we can get upwards of 800, 900 gallons per minute to match our flow. Should we have a fire and, you know, all these other extreme should tragedy, you know, occur.
Yeah, so, it makes sense. Following up on that, though, what about we do have pumps that push the water up to the tanks, do we not?
We have booster pumps, and we just did generator checks on those today. At our Stewart Street tanks, we've replaced a battery and put a new kind of inline trickle charger in there also. Oh, cool. So, yeah.
Okay. And then I guess the other area, which you're not prepared to talk about, is the lift stations, how they're – that's an open question.
But. Yeah, I'd have to defer to John on that.
Thank you.
Okay, absolutely.
Okay, very good. Mr. Weigold, it might be a good idea to have John update us next week on where he's at on the emergency generators for wastewater. Good. Thank you, Mr. Green. All right. I believe the next thing on the agenda is public comment. I have 2 requests for public comment. One is from Ms. Dickinson, followed by Mr. Sassaman.
There we go. So I was listening to what Mr. Gray had to say at previous comment, and
He mentioned, as has been brought up so many times during this whole process of this of the EWS slash SWF project, or whatever name it's ever determined to end up being, and that is that we need to be partnering with the agencies, the regulatory agencies that are so critical in the process. I remember when Dean Flores was here, and I remember him, the lobbyist that we hired, I remember him making that very clear at the time when we were paying him as a lobbyist to be working with Coastal. I can't tell you how many times Coastal, in their comments, have made it very clear what they expect going forward. And I find it remarkable that at almost every turn, the district has chosen to create obstacles to get in the way of where this project, when it gets appealed to Coastal, could have been avoided, or should be, or will be. And that's troubling. And so, you know, I do stay in touch with the agencies. I find that I can get answers from most of the agencies, which I seldom can get from this district. And it's frustrating. So most recently, I was in touch with Tom Luster at the California Coastal Commission and asked him if he'd heard anything about the draft that Mr. Ogren mentioned on June 20th. He said he'd received the draft, that he was going to review it and make a decision. And not one of you board directors, and one is missing, I see, asked him, what are these analyses? What did they provide? I asked him if I could get put in a PRA for the draft. He said, oh, no, it's in draft. So we still don't know that. And that, you know, that needs to be clarified, because we don't know whether there's any repurposing of the pond. Now, Mr. Gray's making some comments today that I would agree with, and Coastal would, that it needs to be restored, to go back to its original, to restored to what it was 23 years ago. So if we tried to do another project, another CIP, then we're talking about lots of money, more permits, and for 20 acre feet of water. So the other thing I wanted to share with you, and I shared it with Mr. Ogren on when I had a meeting with him, was that Mr. Warren, Clyde Warren, the owner of a substantial amount of property, shared with me on June 19th, and I hope I can just finish this. He said he is willing to provide this district free of charge 350,000 gallons of water for firefighting from his storage tanks, from his bladder dams, from his reservoir. I really think it would behoove the district to be in touch with Mr. Warren. He just arrived back from Oregon yesterday, so I know he's here for till the end of July. But to get in touch with this man who has made this offer for free to use his water storage to fight fires. So I asked him, well, how many gallons does a helicopter, a CAL FIRE helicopter, hold? And he said 300 gallons in a drop. Well, imagine how far 350,000 gallons would go free to the district. So I offer that to you. And Mr. General Manager Weigold, I think that's something worth noting. But anyway, I offer that to all of you as well. Thank you.
Thank you. We didn't answer one of Ms. Dickinson's questions, which is why Mr. Weigold is not here, and he's no longer employed by us. Mr. Ogren is no longer employed by us. His contract ran out as of June 30th, and so we are back in negotiations with him to come back as a consultant. So until that time, he decided not to come today, and I don't blame him, because he's not going to get paid for it. So hopefully he'll be back on our payroll as a part-time consultant sometime next month. All right. Next is Mr. Sassaman.
I'm Dave Sassaman, mechanical engineer. I've been in Cambria now 6 years, and I've been following the reverse osmosis process since its beginning. While I was on a cruise, I cut this article out of a magazine or a newspaper, and it said, New Delhi, millions of people are turning to water tank trucks in southern India state as house and hotel taps run dry because of an acute water shortage caused by drying lakes and depleted groundwater. State Rural Development said on Wednesday that the drought followed a 62% shortfall of monsoon rains last year compared with 2017. People are lining up for water cans in the state capital. Some companies ask employees to work from home. Some restaurants are closing early, even considering serving lunch if the water scarcity worsens. The general manager of the hotel plaza said two trucks bring water to his hotel every day from a town 60 kilometers away at a cost of $152 a day or $4,560 a month. Now, without any more, it just shows that if we don't follow through with our water system, the consequences are severe. And it's well known that most of us that retire use our home, our property, the value of our home as part of our retirement plan. But if you want to sell your home and you have to say, well, Tuesdays and Thursdays you don't get water, that's a question that I don't want to ever have to answer. And with the reverse osmosis plant that we've got, I have said before to this group that we have guaranteed that Cambria never runs out of water. Now, the problem is that, yes, some of the design problems didn't pan out, but we have an alternative, and that is to truck the water that is used in the process to an off-site. According to my calculations, if we're running on a two-shift operation, which will provide every person in this town 65 gallons of water per day, it will cost about $40 a month, which would be the dry season, 4 months, $200. We have the drought about every 5 years. This is a dirt cheap insurance to guarantee that we have water. And so I think that not only the water, but the fire situation, because not only can we get 65 gallons a day from the reverse osmosis plant, but we can pick up another 20 gallons per day from the Santa Rosa. 85 gallons a day will provide adequate water for every home, including irrigation. Therefore, I would like to really stress that this board and the people in this town don't follow what India did with lack of supervision and a lack of proposing a facility, and that we get this place online. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you. All right. We're now on to reports, board member reports. I was going to report a little bit on the wilderness preparedness, wildfire preparedness day, but the chief stole my thunder on that one. He did a good job of discussing that one. The other thing I'd like to make everyone aware of is that myself, Barbara Bronson Gray, who is the president of the CCHD in town, and Sam Shalhoub, who is the president of the board of the CUSD, are meeting on a monthly basis to see what synergies that we can get together in order to save money and to make the town better, town and community better. And we're discussing some real opportunities at this time, none of which I'm ready to unveil, but we did come together and we did a newsletter, and this will be in your utility bill that comes to you in the next week or two, right? Yeah, today it's on the way today. Okay, your bill is on your way today, but if you haven't gotten one, there are some of these out in the lobby, okay? So we're trying to inform, and we're trying to, as I said, make the community a little bit better place to live in by coordinating our efforts and getting together. And I'm really impressed with both of my cohorts on that, that they've brought up a lot of things that we can be working on. So that's what I've got. We're now on to the Finance Committee report. Director Steidel.
Thank you. So the Finance Committee, at our last meeting, we went over several things in our agenda, but the one thing that we did spend some time on was completion of the reserve policy. And what that did is actually provide a discussion by the committee, attempting to understand the process for moving the policy forward. And it resulted in two recommendations that the Finance Committee would like to have considered. And I'm sorry that Director Rice isn't here today, because, you know, a lot of what I would like to try to communicate, I would have preferred that she was available to add to it for her committee. But I would like to go forward with the information anyway, so that the committees are understanding some of the committee processes is available. The first thing that the committee wanted me to bring forward was it would be helpful to have a procedure that defines the actual iterative review and handoff of written policies as they're developed. We're not sure what the expected process is by the policy committee when the policies are forwarded to them for review, other than there is something that had been discussed relative to formatting. And then once there is whatever action is taken happens, is the resulting document returned to the originating committee for review of changes or suggested additions or deletions, which, you know, potentially can get into quite an iterative process again, and whether then the completed policy is moved forward to the board by the originating committee or by the policy committee. And all of those sound like very small things, but I think until we actually can get this defined for ourselves, we're kind of creating some probably frustrations and some extended review timelines for what we're trying to accomplish. An additional recommendation from the committee that they would like to have considered is that there's a boilerplate format that's developed by the policy committee and provided to the other standing committees in terms of the actual format. And the thinking behind that is that would actually allow for the majority of the formatting to be done during a policy development by any other committee, and that it would actually probably assist in development of the policy itself, because by having a boilerplate format, there may be areas that the committee somehow would overlook or not consider as part of something in the document that could be an important element, and that provides kind of a statusing or a checklist to bounce against to make sure that you've kind of covered all of the bases in terms of what needs to be documented. It also provides a consistency in locating the information when anyone may be researching policy positions. In other words, if you have boilerplate, if you always know that, you know, organization is under 1.3.2, you know that you can go to any policy and you could find the information there, that it makes it a much more consumable document across the board as far as a policy book. And the boilerplate can be very generic. And any format category that isn't applicable for a given policy that's being developed could be addressed as such or just addressed as an intentionally left blank. So that wouldn't be a hurdle. We felt very strongly that it would streamline the review process through the committees because it would take the onus of being a clerk away from the policy committee and having to take policies developed by other committees and putting them just into a format remove a lot of the busy work, for lack of a better term, of what that might represent. Pretty much what brought this about was the committee had finished a reserve policy. And frankly, we looked at each other and we said, okay, now what do we do with it? So we forwarded it to the staff for President Pearson and Vice President Farmer's consideration for this meeting, for the July meeting, or actually it would have been for later in the month, the second meeting. And it was suggested that the board review be delayed until August, which would allow for the policy committee to have some additional time to work on the format. So I guess I would like to stress that it would be of great value to the other committees, at least from our perspective of having put a policy through on the process, to get maybe one or both of these recommendations in place, and that it might help make things a lot cleaner and smoother in our trying to get these policies developed for ourselves and get things off the ground. So that's my report. And comments. I would appreciate any comments.
Good. Thank you. My comment on the routing would be that the policies should go to the policy committee just for formatting, just to make sure that the format is right, et cetera, and then it would be immediately forwarded to the board for consideration. Content would be coming directly from the standing committee, basically, to us, and not being filtered by the policy committee. Director Al?
Yeah, I tend to agree with President Pearson's point of view. There are, however, some policies which are not in the purview of any either of the standing committees, and those the policy committee, we're hoping, and I think the vice chair is here, so I'm hoping that we're being heard, they would go forward on those. But in terms of the general format and how it's organized, I think it's an excellent idea and eventually maybe something that can be made available to the public, similar to the way the code is, you know, would be really nice.
Oh, yeah. As we pass the policies, I think we just post them out on the website and everybody can see them.
I think it's an excellent suggestion. Yeah.
So I think we kind of ran into a little bit of an aberration with the bylaws, and that kind of got us into a squirrel cage a little bit, because it didn't really fall into the policy part, and so it ended up with a lot of back and forth, and that may have added to the confusion about how then did that experience relate to how we're going to handle the rest of our policies. So I think that may have been a little bit of a stutter step for us.
Right.
Yeah, I think that's understandable. And the bylaws are going to be on the agenda for next Thursday. So we'll be discussing that and passing those and getting that done next Thursday. As far as getting the
A boilerplate?
Yeah, the boilerplate together. I think that's an excellent idea that the policy committee... Okay. Well, you're next. Okay. So that would be my recommendation, is that they start work on that whenever they can.
That's an excellent. I would like to point out, I mean, to everyone, that this is a work in progress. We haven't had these standing committees before, so yeah. we're all learning. Feeling our way through this. But I think we're, if I may say, I think we're doing a good job.
Okay. I agree. All right. For the policy committee, Mr. Heinrichs, are you prepared?
Taking the place here, obviously, for Amanda Rice, and our last meeting was June 27th. So the area that everyone seems to be concerned about is that your organizations, the finance and the reconstruction have been working how long now? Over a year or so? Is that correct? How long have we been working?
A couple months.
Yeah, okay. Now, see what the difference is? My understanding that the first four or five meetings from some organizations were referring to the Brown Act for trying to even get started. And so therefore, for me to get caught up is a little more challenging. And we've addressed Cindy's comments already in that we're working on a standard format. But we have to work on the format to get it to you before you start giving us a format to work on. And we're going to have available next meeting a agenda there that will have a sample arrangement for the first 1,000 series of the formatting that we are suggesting, because we haven't had a direct information from the board of what direction we should be going in. So we want to put something in writing to say, hey, is the board in agreement with this direction? And then we would put together all the other sections accordingly. But we are using the sample book. If you've got the book that's been generated by the state of California, that's what we're using as the guideline. Also, the sections are more so in there than what we have in our book, because we don't have a book. So we're pulling these out of random areas to fill in the blanks. And so it's a very time-consuming direction, but we're trying to get a direction on where we need to go at the moment. And we appreciate Cindy's comments, because those blend right in with what we're doing. And so if she could hold off for another month, we would be able to provide that format and work on those areas. And then she could submit her requests from the different boards or committees to what they need for the policies and see how they fit into what we've agreed. And then we would submit those to the board for their comparisons or good or bad or changes. We did not want to get into the situation where we're going to send back and forth to the other committees and hassle over words and comments until the board saw what the differences were and what we might recommend as a base. Because my impression is we are the policy committee, and we like the input from the other ones, but in this case, I would think those would be only input at this time. So we're going to arrange those appropriately by the existing sample book. And so we were going to have, as President Pearson mentioned, next Thursday, the bylaws written out so that we can see where those differed and what your comments are to get us moving on that. So we did that first, and we're now writing up the policy book, which if you attend our next meeting, and that'll be on the 25th of July at 2 p.m., you'll have a sample book that will give you what we are proposing, and then we would ask that yourself and the other committees have any other suggestions of doing it differently to let us know. That would be my report at the moment.
Good. Excellent. Thank you, sir. Any questions?
May I ask a follow-up question?
Mr. Heinrichs, follow-up question? Thank you.
I just wanted to understand when you were saying that did I understand you to say that you appreciated the input that was provided by other committees in developing the policy?
Once we get a book started.
For individual policies, or are you saying... Are you referring to the policies to be worked on, or are you referring to the content of the policies?
At the moment, until we get a sample policy procedure written up in format, it will be hard for you to relate to what sections you're trying to infer.
Oh.
We're open to your policy concerns and how we can put them in the book
okay.
at the moment.
Okay. I was just clarifying for myself. I wasn't sure whether you were referring to the actual developmental content of the policy, or if it was just the format, or if it was the definition of which policies should be being looked at.
Well, that's what we're starting. We started with the 1000 series, which is number one. And that format, we've gone through some of those to how they relate currently with the book and what the sample says.
Right.
Then from there, you will be able to look further through the sample book before we even get there and say, hey, this needs more higher attention or whatever. And then we can insert that in our sample book. And pretty soon, we'll have a whole complete book.
Okay, that clarifies it for me.
Okay?
Thank you.
I appreciate it.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. All right, on to the resource and infrastructure committee.
Resource and infrastructure. It's all about resources. Okay. Our meeting was on was last month. I've suddenly forgotten when. We are at present, we have two active subcommittees at the moment who are still working. One is reviewing the water supply projections. They're not quite ready to come back with their report yet. And they are still looking at the status of the water supply projections and how effective are the demand demand reduction measures that the district has put in place. As to, for example, how is the retrofit program working, or is it working, or that kind of thing, and how many more things are there to be retrofitted? So how much more can we rely upon? Another thing which was brought up at the last meeting, which that subcommittee will probably work on a little bit, is part of the problem in predicting demand is that this community has been so conserving that some of the assumptions that were made in 2008 may not be true today. But it still remains to be seen as whether how much of the current conservation efforts will continue. Will we be continuing to conserve at the same level? That's a very important question as we go forward. And part of that question, for example, is what effect does the water pricing have on demand? And are there ways we can affect it in that way, for example? So those are issues that are still up and that the subcommittee is still working on through their thousands of pages of documents. The other subcommittee is dealing, and I do expect to commit a report from them at our next meeting to deal more specifically with our mission statement and goals, to try to get those clarified and so that we're all operating in the same direction. However, the big item, so that was the other thing which we started with at our last meeting, was to commence discussion about the project description for the CDP for the new water plant. So, and that was just a beginning, just an opening the door, and we received some public input, a very excellent presentation from Mark Roquefort, for example, which can be found in our when our minutes are posted later on this week for those of the public that are interested in that presentation. It's included as part of those minutes. So where we are now is we are scheduled a meeting on the 23rd of this month, which is not our regular meeting day. We moved it in order to be able to have more productive discussion. The chief topic will be the working on the project description for the CDP. And in that regard, we've also, and this is, I'm directing this now to our friends in the world out there, as well as to everybody in the room, is that we have increased our meeting time from 2 hours to 3 hours because we really want to make it possible for as many people as have something to say that they can be heard. And so I urge everyone who has any interest in this matter to please come. We'll try to keep things orderly, and there shouldn't be too much shouting, but it should be an interesting meeting, and it's certainly a matter which is dear to everyone's hearts one way or another, so we're looking forward. So, again, that's going to be at 2 o'clock on July 23rd in the Vets Hall. That is my report up to this point.
Okay. A couple questions. PG&E. SST, where we sit on that one?
That's the question I have, too. In fact,
okay.
Where we were last time was, I think we recommended that we go forward, but apparently we're still in the process of discussing, and then I know that Mr. Patera is willing to come and talk to folks, but my question to the board is, where actually are we on this? Have we decided to do it, or have we decided that we're just going to decide to do it? Where are we?
I think, you know, my opinion was that we were going to get a recommendation from your committee as to whether we should go forward, and with how much of it should we go forward with.
That okay? I can tell you.
And that's you and the staff, okay, together would say, okay, we think we should go forward with this amount, and we put that in the budget, and we're ready to go with that. And then I think the board needs to then put that on the agenda, and we can do that for August maybe, and that would be a time that Mr. Patera could come and kind of give a short presentation mm-hmm. as to what it is, so that everybody understands it totally, and then we could move forward from there and go ahead and authorize the mm-hmm. moving forward with that. I think that's where we're at.
I think, okay. That being the case, I think what we can do is we'll go ahead and include that on our agenda for the 23rd, because we've already discussed it up and down and sideways, so the issue is we need to issue a formal statement saying, I can tell you what I think we said, but I probably should ask the rest of the committee, but I believe we said, yes, go forward with all 12 for the $116,000. So I do see that in the budget, but I don't think there's been any formal action. But so if you like, I can have that, bring that to the board at our next meeting.
Yeah,
as a formal.
I think that's a budget item that we need to individually authorize to go forward. Yeah.
So would you like that on our next meeting? What is that, next week? Oh no, that's too late. Yeah, never mind.
No, August. It'll be on the August. We can get it on the August agenda though. And that'll be good and timely, and then we can get them kicked off and on their way.
So we can also schedule Brent Patera as well.
Yeah, right.
Okay, we'll do that for August then, and I'll have that on the agenda.
Okay.
Good.
Good. Other questions? Yes, sir. Yes.
So, question: the staff still felt that we should go forward with all 12?
That's where I thought we were. But maybe we need to check that.
Yeah. I mean, it may be worth with a little more time in that, and the potential of actions they've had to take since this was initiated that might preclude one or two of the items actually being necessary or being necessary in the way it was frameworked.
Good point. Mr. Weigold, may I ask that you ask John Alchin to please come to our just for that one agenda item to let us know where we are on those 12 items, and has there been any change? He doesn't have to stay for the whole meeting, but that will give us, I think, what you're asking for. No, it's excellent. No, because as truth be told, I truly don't know other than where we live. I know from talking to John that he'd like everything to be done.
Right.
But is that practical or not? Yeah, I don't know. Yeah.
Right. Right. Good. All right. Very good. I think we're on now to other liaison reports. Director Howell, you want to go first?
Well, or if you've heard enough from me, you could give Vice President Farmer a chance.
You can go ahead.
Okay.
I think the Vice President is still making notes here.
So. Okay. Okay. Well, this is a quicker one. As almost everyone in the room has been to the NCAC Forum on Homelessness, but just a few general remarks. So the NCAC meeting was a town hall to deal with the problem of homelessness, specifically in Cambria, but of course it reaches out much farther than that. And at the there was again a full house. I would say at least probably a couple hundred people were there. Many, many concerned people. It's kind of heartwarming actually to see that. And the presenters, there were a panel of 14 presenters, one of which was a gentleman from the fire department who had to leave due to a call. And just without going through everything that was said, but just a couple of very, very brief comments. I think Bruce Gibson in his initial statement kind of said it, you know, and brought things forward, he said, this is a problem that everybody must address, not just us in Cambria, the folks in the county. It's a huge problem throughout the country. So everybody needs to address it. And speaking specifically to the group in the room, he said, this night may show each of us a path to work on this problem. So that was what set the tone of the meeting. Each of the presenters gave information about what their particular agency or group were doing. And each, there was, interesting to me, there was a certain different takes on the subject in terms of how you classify people, how you interact. But the general message that was being given to everyone is these people are human beings, just like us, just as complex, and they have just as many problems as we do. That it is not illegal to be homeless. So it's very important that we understand that. And for due to recent court decisions, it is also not illegal to sleep in a public place, provided if the public entity has not provided a shelter. Now, so for Cambria, since we don't have a homeless shelter, it means that we can have people sleeping in Shamwell Park, and we can have people parked on the streets if it's legal to park on the streets and sleeping in their cars. That is not illegal. It's important for people to understand that. The other thing that came out from some of the discussions was also, and this is more for the benefit of folks who didn't attend but who may be watching, is that if someone leaves property on your property, you do not necessarily have the right to simply take it and throw it away. There's a whole procedure that you have to go through. Abandoned property is not something that you can then take just like that. In fact, there's even a law regarding appropriation of abandoned property. So things that may look like trash and may be in a trash bag are not necessarily trash. So we have to be extremely careful on how we do this. And I will, just to cap that off, make one kind of sad story. And Carlos, in talking with some of our homeless population out on the ranch, engaged one gentleman who very nicely... They got him a dumpster, and he cleaned up the place. He had everything all set. He had cleaned it up. He had, next to the dumpster is why I understood it, he had a trash bag in which were his belongings that he wanted to keep. He had to leave the area for a short while in order to do something else, and when he came back, that trash bag was gone. So all his good efforts, and yet he still lost all his stuff. So that's kind of sad. It's important to remember that what it looks like trash to you and me may not be. It may be somebody's sleeping bag or who knows what. So that's that is the take that came from the meeting. The other thing, which two things, a statistic, first of all, it was said that California has 25% of the United States homeless population, whereas, as I calculated, we have maybe 10% of the country's population. So we have a disproportionate share of homelessness in our state, and that's just California. Everybody wants to be here. Can't blame them. The other thing, and which I'll pass on, is that most of the representatives from the public agency recommend that see, the issue is trying to get services for people who may need them, and sometimes it takes a while. They may not want them, or they may not want to ask. But if there's some homeless person that's either being a problem for you or that you wish to help, they recommend. I'm only saying what was told to me. So whether this is jives with people's experience or not, we can't really say. But that if a call to 911 is in order, and that they have a special group, a special part of the Sheriff's Department called the CAT team, which I think means Community Action Team, who are specifically tasked with dealing with the homeless people in a humane way. In other words, they don't come out and just take them and throw them in jail. It's for one thing, it's proved to be very uneconomic, and there are other issues. So people need to be aware that that is something they can do. You don't necessarily want to be engaging in self-help and trying to evict somebody off your property all by yourself. You definitely don't want to do that. Nor should you be going out and necessarily cleaning up camps that you see, because they may actually be occupied and there might actually, that might be people's stuff. So, but a call to 911 is definitely an order. So it was very encouraging. The one thing I felt a little sorry about, and maybe it's something this community can deal with more, is that there was a tremendous amount, and it came out in the question and answers. Many people were asking more specifically, what can I do? What can I do to help? And unfortunately, the public agencies didn't really have a lot to give us in that, more than please contact us. So I just wanted to mention that. There is a group in town. What is it called? The Teresa's Group? In the Solution? In the Solution, which was started by Teresa Desmond. Anyone who's interested, I think I have her contact information, and if you find that you'd like to get involved with that, you could contact me, and I would put you in contact with Teresa. And it was very productive, and compliments to NCAC for putting that together. It was great.
Excellent. Thank you. Good report. Vice President Farmer.
I just want to briefly follow up on what Director Howell just presented to us, and I feel a little bit amiss because of all the notes I brought here. I didn't bring the notes from that meeting, but it was, as he said, very heartwarming, not just to hear from the public, but the variety of agencies and groups of people that are out there endeavoring to connect with the homeless in a very humane way and assist them in just meeting basic needs, shower, a meal, that type of thing, just to help them, you know, with their own level of self-esteem, you know, which we can all struggle with, and especially the homeless folks. So that was very, very encouraging. And it just gives you a feeling, I mean, we can be overwhelmed by all the negativity, that all that static that we have going on in the world. But that meeting gave you a totally different feeling about our own humanity and how we relate to one another. All right, so what did I want to do here? So the Cambry Forest Committee met last night, so I might as well get to that one. First off, we discussed a variety of different topics, some that didn't even relate to the Forest Committee. So the first thing I want to mention is that the State Board of Forestry and the Fire Safe Council are going to be here next week, in San Simeon, on Wednesday the 17th at 9 a.m. Now, the State Board of Forestry, if you're not familiar with them, they were last here in our area 17 years ago. So they thought, oh, well, let's go back to Cambria now. So they're going to take a tour of the area, especially the Bridge Street area, where the as well as out on Cambria Pines Road, where the Scotch broom was removed, see how effective that process was. And they're also meeting the previous day and the following day at Cal Poly to do more work in what needs to be done in the area. Also brought up was with regard to the health of trees, when a building permit is given to someone to build a home, and how much attention is paid to the tree's drip line. And the drip line, you look at, well, how far out does the tree go? And that's where a tree needs to be watered more than anything. Not right there at the base, but you go out to the trees because that's where the roots are. And how is that being considered when a home is approved for building? And then the replanting ratio, is it 2-to-1 or 4-to-1 if a tree is lost? Also discussed is regard to the recent meeting that we had regarding PG&E potential power outages during times of possible fire, and talking about the evacuation routes, especially on Odge Hill. And a couple of things were brought up with regard to how can we as residents, as homeowners or renters, deal with the possibility of fire and how to retard it in our own immediate areas. And one of them was vegetation management, which we all know about, having, keeping trees far away, keeping plants farther away from your home, having plants that are less prone to catching on fire, and also ember-proofing one's home. In other words, it's usually the embers that get on your roof, that's what causes a fire. So how do you ember-proof your home? And one of those would be, well, I see somebody that I've known here for years, Tom, and he's redoing people's roofs. He's got a backlog because people are removing, you know, shingles, wooden shingles, and replacing them with substances that won't necessarily catch on fire. And also what was brought up is the fact that now people are more concerned about fire. People are going out and getting generators, but do they know actually how to operate a generator during a time of fire? So we felt that maybe that needs to be addressed. Is the Cambria Tourism Board and the Chamber of Commerce, are they preparing the businesses, especially the motels and restaurants, for potential fire outage, you know, power outage, and how are they going to be dealing with that? So I guess we'll be connecting at some point with those folks. Also, by the way, the use of one thing came up was the use of soaker tubes. Now, Paul, you're here. If you feel that we need to elaborate on this, please feel free to step up. Paul Nugent, who's a board member of Forest Committee, and the heads of the Forest Committee here as well. But soaker tubes to dampen the exterior of your home when we know that there's a fire arriving, to hopefully prevent a fire from occurring. Also, we discussed how does a project on the water wait list, how will that ultimately affect the surrounding wooded area, and how should this be addressed in the future? And then finally, there's going to be a presentation in August by Kirsten Sheehy, and this might be something that people are not even aware of, but one of the problems, especially on the ranch, in certain areas of the ranch, has been Cape ivy. And apparently there's this new fly called the galling fly. While it won't prevent Cape ivy, it will retard its growth. And so that's something that, and if you happen to have Cape ivy anywhere near your home, you might want to come to this presentation to figure out a way. And of course, once you tear it out, it just comes back. And this might be something you want to look at for the future. With regard to the Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch, just goes to show you how out of it one can be. So I'm working on the last meeting, and I'm saying, you know, this stuff looks very familiar. Well, I was doing the meeting from April, so this is the meeting that took place in June, and the July meeting is happening tonight. So this is what happened in June. So first, I'm going to hit the light spots, okay? So Friends of the Fiscalini Ranch Preserve, they have a new expanded website. So they're announcing events, signing up to volunteer or donate to FFRP, the importance of we as people and the ranch agency itself becoming a force for nature. Available at the website is a very attractive slideshow presentation, and so they're trying to make people more aware of our intimate connection with nature, not just on the ranch, but of course, just in life itself. Also, what was discussed, grants had been applied for with regard to education, and these grants have been approved. So there's going to be more involvement with the students from the middle school, but especially Leffingwell students, and becoming involved in stewardship on the ranch. Also, there's a possibility of wellness equipment out on the ranch for exercising and fitness. Also, there's been a grant obtained regarding the butterflies on the ranch and aiding them. Also, Mark Larson was contacted by the folks that are organizing the Pine Dorado Parade, and so the FFRP has decided to be in the Pine Dorado Parade. So that's going to be nice. That's the first time that's ever happened. Ted Siegler gave his usual lengthy and informative report on the finances. What he said in three words will pretty much describe it. Finances are healthy. So that's a good thing. What else was discussed at the last meeting? I'll talk about the homeless issue first. Obviously, it's already been addressed by Director Howell and what happened at NCAC. So I'll just briefly touch base. So Carlos mentioned something that we would obviously figure out is happening. Much time and resources is being spent on the homeless issue. So other needs with regard to resources, Carlos. Facilities and resources, thank you. The Veterans Hall, the needs of the Veterans Hall are being neglected, so that's something that we need to look into. Also, what Carlos did say, this is a positive thing, that most of the occupants, the homeless occupants on the ranch, have been compliant in cleaning up their areas and leaving. And as we've described in the past, many of the occupants of the ranch are people, transients, that are just passing through town. But if there are any locals, and there's few of them, that are occupying the ranch, they've been quite cooperative. What else did I want to mention with this? So as we've talked about before, the facility staff is patrolling the ranch three times a week, and they continue to find trash and other building materials by the creek and the various trails. And they're also meeting, the facilities and resources staff is meeting with SLO County Homeless Services and the Salvation Army to provide more services to the homeless people. Thistle growth has exploded on the ranch, as it has all around the area. So they've been using a spray, an herbicide. A minimum amount of is being used, and they also are doing spot spraying as well as, you know, larger spraying. With regard to what's being done on the ranch, several willow trees have been fallen over, so they've been cut and chipped up. Many fire breaks have been completed. Over 200 acres of where invasive plants are have been treated. I guess I already didn't mention that. And then finally, a variety of forest trails are being addressed, and 24 yards of ice plant were removed. No doubt I have something else that I'm supposed to talk about, but I've already talked enough, so we'll just, I guess that's it. Thank you.
Good. Thank you.
Oh, let me add one more thing. With regard to the meeting tonight at 6 o'clock at Rabobank, one of the main issues that's going to be discussed has to do with a development plan for finances. And they're going to have targets for fundraising revenues. And let me just read this. The goal is going to be an effective development plan with a ending in mind, and overall this has to do with a fundraising goal for next year and for each of the following 4 years. So that's the main thing that's going to be discussed this evening.
Good. Thank you. Excellent reports. Anyone else? No? Onward and upward. We're now at item number six, manager's reports, general manager and the finance manager, and I have two requests to speak on this item, so we'll do those first so that hopefully the management and staff will be able to answer their questions if they have any as they come up. So first will be Ms. Dickinson, followed by Ms. Heinrichs.
Thank you. On this newsletter that I picked up from the foyer. A couple of things. I don't really. It's saying here that the evaporation pond was formally emptied and closed. That is not correct. There has not been an inspection by Mr. Lodge or Mr. Rocky. So I think that needs to be clarified, maybe by President Pearson, because other people are watching this or will be. The other one is we continue to make progress on the regular coastal development permit for the emergency water plant, and then in paren SWF. We are moving toward a date with the County Planning Commission by the end of the year. So from my perspective, this is really difficult. There is actually nobody on staff today that can answer questions for me related to getting the regular CDP. So who are we supposed to ask? Because we're supposed to come up with some help in a discussion. I don't know when that meeting will take place. It was listed the 16th of July. I've heard it may have been changed to the 23rd of July. I see a town hall meeting on the website, CCSTIB's website, for July 31st. So can President Pierce, can you help me with what's coming up?
Director Howell talked about the delay that they made to their meeting. It's now on the 23rd.
It is for sure.
And it's going to start at 2 o'clock instead
at
of 3 o'clock.
Okay, and will Mr. Ogren be in attendance at that meeting?
I believe so.
Okay, because I mean, he's the one that's been working on this. So, okay. Let's see. So that was that.
And the meeting on the 31st is a town hall about the mission, and that has really nothing to do with the CDP at that point.
Okay. So I've been reaching out to Mr. Singleball. The last time I heard from him was April 15th until he responded to a call a couple of days ago, and he said that he's waiting to hear from the district on the project description. I understand there's going to be a meeting maybe next week with R&I, Chair, Vice Chair, yourself, Mr. and General Manager Weigold, and Mr. Singlewald, so that maybe something can be settled and before the next meeting on the 18th. So if you meet the 17th, maybe there'll be something to report on the 18th. Is that possible for the public? We're kind of in the dark.
I think the next CDP information will probably be at the R&I meeting on the 23rd. And then in August for us.
Okay, so nothing for the community to know. Okay, so I just wanted to give you a heads up on what I received from Mr. Luster. If you might give me a couple of extra seconds, it might be helpful to you. So I asked Mr. Luster, the Coastal Commission, had he heard anything on from Mr. Ogren, because they had been in touch and he had put out a message to Mr. Ogren. He was waiting to hear back. He said he hadn't heard from either the CCSD, county, or Cannon Engineering about potential pond repurposing or about possible changes to the project description. He said he did get a message from Mr. Ogren last Tuesday, but then he was gone for a few days. He said I advised him to listen to the R&I June 18th audio tape. He said he listened to a portion of it, and these are the points he makes. That the permit may not get to the board, this is what he learned from listening, until the first half of the next year, Board of Supervisors. Two, the discussions about what it would take to use the facility during other than Stage 3 declarations. That certain members of the public gave their perspectives. I think specifically Mr. Rochefort gave a statement or report. The other one is the confusion about the history of the change from the EWF to the SWF and still unknown what production levels to expect. Not covered were the longstanding in-stream flows issues, which Commission has requested and County says they're not required, according to Mr. Singlewald, and no discussion of the likelihood that substantial mitigation might be needed if the pond remains as is and how the water licenses might affect production volumes, etc. So I want to share that with you guys, okay? That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Heinrichs.
Thank you. Yes, I'm following up on the discussion of the pond, the closure of the impoundment pond. Well, it's a relief to have this project moving forward toward a conclusion. It's really a stretch to portray this as any kind of success. The pond has been a problem since the start. This is really more like putting lipstick on a pig to call this some kind of success. It's been the result of fines, There's been a cease and desist order. It's been a major problem for the district. It remains the subject of a $3.5 million lawsuit. So there's a lot of time, energy, and money continues to go into this part of the project, which was never a success. This Cannon Engineering report, I'm a little disappointed that Mr. Ogren isn't here today, too, because he's the only one who apparently has seen this report, which was commissioned by him for about $12,000 on possibly repurposing the pond. Who is now, will he be back? Who is now going to be advising on the Cannon Engineering repurposing ideas? We certainly need to know more about that. I look forward to hearing that. I'm really grateful to Mr. Warren for his offer of water for firefighting. This is wonderful. A lot of people misunderstand the emergency water project and think it has something to do with firefighting. I've heard this before. People say, oh, well, we'll just plug in a hose and use it to fight a fire. It does not work that way. It will never work that way. And we have, although we spent $20 million on this, we have done nothing to address the issue of water storage that could be used to fight fires. The saga of the coastal development permit goes on, and the projected costs continuing to rise. The costs of getting rid of the brine waste, the cost of disposing of the effluent and the pond, all these things. I was interested to hear that the blowers, which were also non-functional from the beginning, have been removed. Has the district been in some kind of negotiation with Western Alliance Bank, which owns this? This has been held up as something that prevents us from making any changes to the plant, but perhaps it's time to put the whole project on the board if we're negotiating with Western Alliance Bank and renegotiate the terms of that very unfavorable installment sale agreement, which governs it. So I look forward to hearing more about these projects. I'm excited that this brine impoundment pond is now being resolved, and perhaps it will be returned to its natural state. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Weigold, time for the general manager's report, which I'm assuming will be short and to the point.
Yes, Mr. President, today is day 11 on the job. As you can see in my report, I listed four events that I participated in prior to taking the job. That was all on my own time, largely on my own expense, with the exception of the General Manager Leadership Summit, which the district paid for my registration and attendance. So thanks for very much for that. That was a huge jump start for me in the job, because it started my network throughout the California organization. In my first 11 days, I have been doing onboarding and turnover with the interim general manager. My plan is for a approximately 45 to 60 day education and getting smart and learning what we have here in the community. Mind you, that's in addition to doing the job. So those two are concurrently ongoing. To date, my priority is meeting with the staff, department heads, and the remaining members of the staff, and doing in-depth tours of all the facilities that we have here in Cambria that we're responsible for CCSD. An example of that would be that I spent 6 hours alone on two different days just on the wastewater plant. My methodology is to go through everything, open every door, every closet, every piece of equipment, understand how we're taking care of things, how we're operating, how we're maintaining from stem to stern. So I can tell everyone in the room here that all of my work is really thorough, and my plan is to report back all my findings from all the departments and the staff to the board, which I will, which is my next stage of my onboarding process. And then what I've also been doing is, with the board's help and the community's help, is identifying what I term external stakeholders, or you could argue also that these are internal because they're part of Cambria. And these are organizations like Green Space. I've attended last Wednesday morning the table talk session with Vice President Farmer and Director Howell. All these are hugely helpful for me because it really gives me a sense of where we need to spend time, what the issues are on the minds of everyone in the community, and I get a really good cross-section of opinions. Obviously, no shortage of opinions in the community, which are, I look as a huge plus, because that means everybody cares. And so I look at this as a huge plus and strength of the community. I can tell you I've not lost any hope in anything. In fact, I've gotten more excited each day showing up for the job. And I haven't seen anything yet where we can't solve issues in the community. There are lots of potential solutions, and I'm prepared to outline those and take us down the path that you so direct.
Terrific. Thank you. Any questions on any of the general manager's report? Director Howell.
Not a question, but a suggestion. In terms of something, Mr. Weigel, that you might want to go to would be the NCAC meeting, which is next Wednesday. That's an opportunity to see, because it's a large group that's from many different aspects of the community. So it's a good, you can get a good view of the whole thing that way. Also an excellent opportunity to meet some of the important movers and shakers that are in the town. And the other thing which I've been asked to do is to invite you to the Forest Committee meeting, which will be in a month hence. Again, very useful to get that. And I do want, did you meet like with the Chamber of Commerce or any of those folks, or the realtors? Or
I did meet with the president of the chamber my first day in the job.
Good, because I want to be sure you got all sides, not just, you know, well, I want to say our side, but no, all sides. It's really important. Yeah, good.
Vice President Farmer.
Oh, I didn't even realize I have my light on. The next Forest Committee meeting is on August 14th. It's usually the second Wednesday of the month, 6:30 at Rabobank.
Okay. Director Steidel.
In following with the suggestions of attending meetings, I'm sure that your list would be added to, but with the R&I committee meeting and the finance committee meeting also at some point.
That is on my intention is to, at least if my stuff calendar permits, I'm attending the first one available that I can possibly attend. So the Finance Committee meeting and the R&I are both on my agenda to attend.
Excellent. Thank you.
Question. Director Howell.
There is a lack of clarity, I think, on the date of the next Finance Committee meeting. Director Steidel, could you help me on that?
Well, I
could
get money.
Sorry.
Haley, do you know? Haley knows.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering about, because I think it might have gotten moved and I didn't.
It's Tuesday, July 30th.
So it is the 30th. It is definitely the 30th.
Same time, same place.
Okay.
Very good. Okay. Anyone else? Questions for the general manager in his report? All right, we'll move along to the finance manager's report.
Thank you, President Pearson, members of the board. I just wanted to make a quick comment on the status of the audit. Mr. Bruner, since this writing of this report, he was out on site at the district office on July 2nd and July 3rd. And we did get through a lot of work that we needed to do for the past fiscal year 16-17. So he is very comfortable with that data and moving forward with the 17-18 audit. So he will not be back on site, or he was not back on site this week. He had another commitment for another client, but he plans on being on site as much as possible next week and the following week, so we can kind of get all the field work completed. And then him and I will both have a lot of writing to do to complete the audit during the month of August. So that's the plan at this point. And I'll just keep you updated as we go.
Good.
So by saying that the report would be written in August, is what I heard you say, that the audit report would be available?
So we'll be working on the write-up of the audit report. The goal is to have it, a draft, available at the end of August. That seems to be about the quickest we could have it. We probably will not make the August agenda since it's early. We have early meetings in August.
Okay.
So I anticipate having it on September. So we'll just have to go through the motions and see if we can make that happen.
Good.
We also have to rely on an outside agency for a report, the GASB 68 report, which is related to all of our pensions. They have to, we've contracted with a service to do that. So that's in place, and you know, I've made them aware that we need this report in 30 days. So hopefully we get that and all the timing works out well.
Thank you.
Any other questions for the finance manager? Anybody need a break? Yes? All right, let's take a five-minute break, or we'll reconvene at exactly 4 o'clock. Thank you. All right, reconvening our meeting. Thank you, everyone. We are now on number 7, the consent agenda. Is there anything that anyone wants to pull off of the consent agenda or make comment on? Vice President Farmer.
Yeah, I just would like to make a brief comment, as I do every month, just with regard to the, let's say, the major costs that exists with regard to the emergency water facility, and you know, the closure of the impoundment basin goes on. The investigating the repurposing of it goes on. So what happened last month with regard to dealing with the basin, West Coast Tree Service, the debris solids removal was $15,000. And Cannon Corporation, with regard to maybe redesigning the pond, that was about $3,500. But also legal fees with regard to the emergency water facility with Farallon Corporation, as well as with Rutan and Tucker, just under $17,000. And so the total amount spent on the facility is just under $40,000. Of course, they have electricity and other costs. But I just want to mention that we never really know how much staff time is being put into the facility itself, reports needing to be done, various statistics needed to be gathered. And I just want to you know, follow up on what was said. When we think about the amount of time that has been spent on the impoundment basin itself, legal fees, having to deal with the Regional Water Quality Control Board. It's been it's probably been one of the most problematic issues that this district has had to face time-wise and money-wise in a long, long time. And hopefully this will come to an end at some point soon. And it's hard to see it as a success. I guess the only success is someone finally figured out that this pond was never meant to be there in the first place, and we've had to deal with that process. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. I'll entertain a motion to approve the consent agenda. We have a motion and a second. Anyone?
Sure, I'll second it. Thank you. Thanks, okay. Don.
So we have a motion and a second to approve the consent agenda. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Director Seidel.
Aye.
Vice President Farmer.
You bet.
Director Howe.
Aye.
President Pearson.
Aye. All right, we're now on to regular business. We have one item. General Manager Weigold, would you like to introduce this item?
I think the Chief's going to end up talking. President Pearson, I'm going to refer this over to the Chief to begin.
Very good. Chief Hollingsworth.
Thank you for having us back again today. What we have before you on item 8A is the culmination of a number of months of work. If you recall, back in February of this year, there was a significant water flood within the fire station that forced the temporary evacuation of personnel for about a week. Emergency service crews come in and do water evacuation, carpets, and all that kind of stuff. Most of the work that needs to be done and repaired is cosmetic in nature. There's a little bit of drywall work, a lot of texturing, painting, remolding. There's a couple of cabinets that need to be replaced. There is one minor structural issue in regards to a shear wall that had to be cut out to get water, evacuate water out of the building. If you can imagine, you've all been in the building. That entire front portion of the building was under about 3 inches of water. So, and that was for a long period of time before, because we were out doing other things in the middle of the night. So that being said, we were going through the RFP process to get it repaired. We had three different companies bid on it initially. All three of those companies pulled out at some point in the bid process, and the explanations behind that were all in relation to not wanting to work on a public building with the parameters and guidelines that they're required to do, which include registration with the Department of Industrial Relations, bidding it as a prevailing wage job. The list goes on. The tentative bids that we were getting back were all in excess of $50,000 initially, so we know that where the money probably would have been in regards to how much it would have cost. That being said, I had a discussion with the former interim general manager, Mr. Ogren, about how we can move forward, because this is our home. It's a business as well, but it's a home for the people when they're there. So it's frustrating if you can imagine your own home being torn up for that amount of time and not being able to have the doors open to the public as necessary. That being said, we pursued a conversation with SDRMA or insurance carriers about having them reimburse staff to do the work internally. One of my personnel is a licensed contractor bonded for the state of California, and he was willing to put together a bid and put all that stuff together. SDRMA liked the idea because there's a significant cost savings associated with that, because we were able to pay our personnel less than what the prevailing wage rates would be in regards to how many personnel hours they'd have to do that. That being said, SDRMA, we turned all that information in. They gave us a settlement suggestion of a little over $37,000. That is above and beyond the a little over $11,000 that's already been paid out in regards to claims and repair work that's already been completed. We did in this process have to make sure that we followed the California Uniform Construction Act Accounting Act guidelines, and really that was a process in regards to making sure that we're paying the fully overhead or fully burdened rate of the personnel and make sure we're not missing any monies anywhere in that process. So Pam with the finance department was able to put that together, and in the process of that evaluation found out that our fully burdened rate internally with the CCSD is already higher than that CUPCA rate. rate, which is so we went ahead and used that to make sure that we got the highest reimbursement as possible. You'll see on page two the specific breakdown in regards to building repairs that building repairs that includes wages and materials. There's some additional plumbing repairs. I went ahead and had the plumbers go ahead and proactively replace some of the lines that were similar to the other ones that failed, so we could hopefully prevent this problem in the future. And then contents, which have already been replaced. A lot of that was computer equipment, backup batteries, and the like. So therefore, what we have for you today is a offer from SDRMA for the settlement of $37,564.37 for us to move forward. If approved, we can submit this for reimbursement. We can get that check on hand and start moving forward with the repair work internally. That should take a little less than 4 weeks using personnel we have on staff. You'll notice, additionally, the suggested cost for wages was billed at the highest rate possible for our personnel. So what that does is allow me to bring in lower ranking personnel at a lower hourly rate and save any even additional money as necessary. And lastly, we had additional discussions with the adjuster that if for some reason some unforeseen thing happens, we have the absolute right to go back to them and say that we need an adjustment to this proposed reimbursement because of XYZ, and they were very amenable to that concept because this still, in the long run, looks like a significant cost savings to SDRMA. So I'm over to you for any questions.
Anyone have a question? Director Howell.
Couldn't help wondering, are you having employees that are working out of classification to fix this? Or
negative. So my point in saying that is that we would have, I have personnel on staff that are hired as fire captains or fire engineers or reserve engineers, or reserve firefighters. If I were to bring them in for the purpose of texturing a wall that day and spend 8 hours that day doing that, we would pay them at their rate. We wouldn't be paying them out of class. We wouldn't be paying them a different CUPCA rate. We would be going with what their regular rate is. And just as a follow-up to this, as you know, as a cost-saving measure a number of years ago, there hasn't been an administrative assistant at the fire department for a long time. I do not have the time to do all of the background work to make this happen, and this absolutely could not be before you without the assistance of both Pam and Haley. Both of them put an enormous amount of time in helping collate this information, putting all the CUPCA rates together, and that's the kind of stuff that an administrative assistant with the department would have been able to do. So I just wanted to give a big public kudos to both of them because it was a huge help.
All right. Any other questions? I saw you got a new washing machine, too.
Yeah, it failed as well.
That was a problem, yeah. Okay. And that's already on site, right?
Yes, the computer replacement, all the backup emergency batteries, the washing machine, a couple of two specific CPUs for computers have all been replaced and are already online.
Okay, and working. So we've already spent that money. Good. All right, so I'll entertain a motion.
I just want to compliment Pam at Finance as well as the people at the fire department who obviously had to put in some extra time and energy to get everything organized for this process to continue.
Yes, good work. All right, a motion to approve the resolution.
Yeah, I'll make a motion that we approve the Special District Risk Management Authority offer to resolve Cambria Community Service District claim number 7727.
And a second?
I'll second that.
All right. Very good. We have a motion and a second. Could we have a roll call vote, please?
Vice President Farmer?
Yes.
Director Howe?
Aye.
Director Steidel?
Aye.
President Pearson?
Aye. All right,
from everybody in the fire department, thank you very much.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. All right. Last item on the agenda is future agenda items. Any discussion by anyone on any of these items? The town hall meeting on July 31st, I think, might be a little premature because the general manager won't have a time to get his feet on the ground by then, but I can go either way on that one, but I could see pushing that out until maybe September or something like that for two reasons. One is to give the general manager time to get up to speed on more things and get his handle around the staff and that kind of thing, and also having it outside of the quote-unquote vacation period and when everybody's back in town. So up to the board as to whether they want to push that out or keep the date as July 31st.
So we can put that on the agenda for next week, is it? Or you want to discuss that now, or are we?
Yeah, we can discuss it now, I think.
I think I concur. I think it's a good idea to push it out.
Push it out, I agree.
Vice President Farmer.
Since the main discussion was going to be the mission statement of the district, and then Ms. Rice and I, Director Rice and I, we talked yesterday about perhaps also having our new general manager, Mr. Weigold, participate in this. So there could be maybe a question and answer session so the community could get to know Mr. Weigold a little bit better, why he took this job, what he hopes to accomplish and that type of thing. And it would be nice if that happened a little bit sooner than later, but I think the point is well taken. So I thought what I would do right now, it's just going to take less than 15 seconds to read the mission statement for the district, and then I'll make one comment. So as an independent special district, and if I'm not mistaken, this mission statement was organized about 20 years ago. As an independent special district, the goal of the Cambria Community Services District is to provide high-quality water, wastewater, fire, and other community services to its customers in a safe, cost-effective, and environmentally sensitive manner. So that's pretty brief and to the point. I would say that we would all hope that the district would be capable of doing this. I would say so far this process really hasn't been happening. And I'm not going to get into why, but I'd like to think that this relatively new board and a new general manager will be totally committed to making sure that this mission statement is totally put into action and is achievable and will serve the ratepayers of this community. And that's all I have to say. Thank you.
Okay, good. Director Stidell. No. All right. My experience with mission statements is that the way to make them effective by having them actually be executed is to get those people who are going to execute them to buy into the mission statement and maybe even to write the mission statement. So getting community input, I think, is important and key, and I think we should do that. We can do that the end of this month, or we can push it out a couple of months and reschedule for September. Are we capable of doing that now, or do we have to wait until next week and put it on the actual agenda, Mr. Carmel?
You couldn't take formal action on it now.
Okay, we could not.
Do you want to put it on a specific future agenda? That you can do now. You can't actually take the action.
Can we take the action of moving the meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
No, you can take the action of agendizing it so that you can consider it at a future meeting. You can't deal with the substance.
So right we now. Have to consider it at next Thursday's meeting, because otherwise it'll happen before we do anything.
We'll get it on that agenda.
So I'm burdening.
Haley.
Can you get just a little? We don't need a staff report or anything like that. We just need it on the agenda for discussion.
Well, even if we have to amend the agenda on Monday, that's possible. We can do it.
Yeah, we can do it. That's fine. We'll amend on Monday. All right, so we'll put it on the agenda, and then we can talk about it next week. But in the meantime, if you want to look at a date, look at your calendars for September. That might be something that you could bring with you on Thursday. All right. Anything else from anyone? All right. We're adjourned. Thank you.
Wait.